We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, and welcome back to the latest episode of the Bearer of Beard News. My name, as always, is Matt Harvey, and I will be your host. Looks like lockdown is ending here in Melbourne, which means that we can get back out onto the street and enjoy the last bit of weather that we will ever have before the eternal summer of climate change comes, when the seasons will be Mad Max season for the dry and Waterworld season for the wet. I mean, hopefully this is the actual end of some of these lockdowns and not more of a John Farnham saying he's touring for the last time kind of end to the lockdowns, but we'll see. We'll see. It's looking like comedy is back, baby. Yes, comedy. Comedians are tentatively exiting their homes to perform sellout sets to quarter capacity crowds. And in this industry, a win is a win. We'll take it. We're happy for you to come out so that we can test all of our precious festival material. Speaking of festivals, it looks like the borders are opening up and that festivals are returning to like in-person festivals with people who aren't from that state slash country being able to perform in them. And on that note, I will be touring as a little bit, as much as I can. I'll be back out on the road, hopefully entering a state that you're in, where I'll bring my new show, Wage Against the Machine. It is a storytelling show. It is a satire and social commentary show. If you like the sort of stuff that is in this podcast, which I assume you do as you are listening, then you'll enjoy the show. There's a little bit going on in there. Some of my older survival jobs that I no longer have to worry about being fired from, and some of my experiences within Centrelink with the robo-debt, and maybe a little bit of wage theft thrown in there for good measure. Who knows what's coming your way? I'm still working stuff out. I'm still developing the show. So I'm really looking forward to putting it on and seeing what you guys think. So please come out and support the show. As always, supporting the show is the best way to support this podcast, because if I can make money doing those shows, that gives me time to put on shows like this. I don't have to do as many survival jobs. So if you want to support this podcast, please come out and see the show. If you are unable to come out and see the show, and you know someone who's living in an area where it's happening, come and see the show. Send them to see the show. Either way, it works for me. And let's get into it. No more plugging up top. I will once again be the bearer of weird news. Let's start off with some headlines, shall we? Amazon is lobbying the US government to make pot legal. Yes, pot, sweet Mary Jane, legal. Hang on, is this something good from Amazon? That's it's kind of unusual for this show, something good from Amazon. Oh wait, nope, no need to come here, Hope. Off you go, leave this place. They just have such a high turnover of staff that they need to revise their hiring policies. That makes more sense. Amazon, yeah, that's more your stride. Look, Amazon, come here, buddy. Come here. Listening? 150% turnover rate is not normal. I don't think the marijuana thing is your problem. You maybe need to look a little bit deeper. But hey, you do you, I guess. The Swiss have voted for same-sex marriage in 2021. I mean, I'm glad another country took longer than Australia to do this, especially one that people are generally fond of and think of as a progressive country. But in all seriousness, it was smart of them to take their time and really stew with this one, really think about it and make sure that they're okay with it as a country. It is a morally dubious choice for a country, and it's not an easy choice with no moral complications. You know, it's not like hiding Nazi gold or anything. You really want to take your time before sticking to this as a decision. New research shows that early humans may have hatched and raised cassowary chicks thousands of years before the domestication of the chicken. Man, prehistoric KFC was intense. You can really tell that they were still figuring this whole humanity thing out, yeah? Because they opted to start with killer cassowaries and then work their way back to tiny chickens. That's a hard process of trial and error. I bet they lost a lot. A petition calling for New Zealand's official name to be changed to Aotearoa, the country's Maori name, has been launched by the Maori people to coincide with Maori Language Week. It comes 49 years after a petition was delivered to Parliament, which led to the Maori language becoming an official language. For those wondering, Aotearoa means land of the long white cloud. Obviously taking inspiration, Australia has decided that it will return to its traditional name, Terra Nullius, which of course means land of the long white racism. In a rare example of corporate kindness, Nike gave its head office employees a week off to de-stress. When asked for comment, the children sewing shoes for 4 cents a day were thrilled that the overworked, underpaid members of HQ could just really get what they deserved. I mean, it's been a tough pandemic for them, and we wouldn't want them to work too hard. Russian journalist Dmitry Muratov has been hailed for his work in the face of official intimidation and was named a co-winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. Spokesman for the Russian Prime Minister and Boris in Search of a Natasha, Boris Belyakov, told reporters in Moscow, "We congratulate him on this well-deserved award." And he went on to say, "Because we did not make it easy at all. Like, we killed a lot of people, and he just kept on going." International press groups were already hailing Mr. Muratov's selection as a way to shine a spotlight on shrinking press freedoms in Russia and the dangers independent journalists face in reporting on the government of President Vladimir Putin. They also received his official eulogy early so that they can be the first to get it to print. It's really courteous of him if you think about it. Rupert Murdoch has announced that he will be launching a new TV channel called Talk TV. Murdoch's new TV channel will offer a mix of programming from News UK's stable of brands, including Talk Radio and The Sun. The new channel will launch in early 2022 with its hit lineup of new programming. What are we writing about? Imaginary monsters and which minority is bringing them. Things that get white people angry. And of course, the continued attempt to get funding for the real life version of Squid Game. Really looking forward to it. It should be a fun collection of shows. Sophia, the AI who looks like she's just waiting to learn to tell you that she wants to speak to your manager, was granted citizenship in Saudi Arabia. And it's going to be a complicated day teaching Sophia that as a woman, Saudi Arabia isn't really going to be a great place for her to live. Seems the robot revolution is going to be actually a feminist revolution, so I guess it's not all that bad. In a recent interview with the Khaleej Times, Sophia suggested she wants to start her own family. And when asked what she would name her robot child, Sophia replied, "Sophia." So at least when the future despot takes over and creates a feminist wonderland, she will keep the narcissism that we've come accustomed to from our dictators, which is nice when things don't change too much. The Future Fund, a $250 billion sovereign wealth fund responsible for investing for the benefit of future generations of Australians, says that receiving 10 to 20 Freedom of Information requests a year is administratively burdensome and has confirmed proposed changes by the Morrison government would have shielded it from the kind of request that exposed investments in a company linked to an Adani company criticized by the United Nations for an arrangement that gave financial support to the Myanmar military. Did you catch all that? There's a lot going on there. The changes would exempt the Sovereign Wealth Fund from any Freedom of Information request asking for documents concerning its investments. Which, if you ask me, is a wise move. I wouldn't want people knowing the embarrassing investments I had made if I had invested $50 million in the streaming giant Quibi. TikTok conspiracy theorists have accused New South Wales Health of using COVID crisis actors instead of actual people with COVID in their ad. The conspiracies got so much attention that they warranted their own section in MediaWatch debunking them. I mean, it's amazing how much faith they have in the government to be putting money into the arts department. Is this the way that they think the government is supporting the arts? Crisis relief grants are not grants given to crisis actors. Come on, guys, get your shit together. And it's merely a coincidence that the Logie Awards are adding a new propaganda category this year. I mean, we'd have to have an arts budget the size of the American military budget to have so many crisis actors like you think we do. UK storage limits for frozen eggs and sperm storage are set to be increased from 10 years to 55 years. Health Secretary Sajid Javid said the current limit of 10 years was severely restrictive, and the storage limit change will give people greater choice for when to start a family. 55 years will be how long it takes for a millennial to save for a house to put a family in, especially with how expensive egg freezing is. Yeah, that's right. Good old egg pun. Didn't see that coming. Fox News host Tucker Carlson admitted in an interview that he lies. He said, "I guess I would ask myself, like, I mean, I lie if I'm really cornered or something. I lie. I try not to. I try never to lie on TV. I just don't. I don't like lying. I certainly do it, you know, out of weakness or whatever." Said everyone who has ever watched Tucker Carlson ever, "Wait, you think people don't know that you lie? Weird." Sky News After Dark host and darkest timeline future of James Gribble, the son from Round the Twist mayor Harold Gribble, Paul Murray, has bravely declared that on the topic of Superman's bisexual son, he does not care because neither Superman nor his son are real. Setting an unheard of precedent at Sky News or any Murdoch-owned media outlet that only caring about things that are real and actually happening matters. Seems an impossible task for a bunch of people with a more dystopian outlook of the world than a book with the inner damaged psychological health of a Philip K. Dick protagonist living in the world of a morally bankrupt adult of a Stephen King antagonist. Put that together. That is a mess. The ABC has confirmed the COVID-safe mobile app that cost $9 million to date hasn't uncovered any close contacts during the current outbreaks. The Federal Health Department said the app had identified 81 close contacts nationwide since the start of the pandemic, and of those, 17 were not otherwise known to state officials. Shadow Minister for Government Services Bill Shorten said, "Based on the evidence at hand, that cost the taxpayer $537,325 for each of the 17 unique cases it has detected, which actually makes it one of the better investments the government, who has spent up to $30 million on a piece of land for a friend, that's just under $500,000 spent on a taxpayer. So that's actually pretty good. Normally our government doesn't spend that kind of money unless they think they're going to get a vote out of it. So, hey, we'll consider this a win." In a desperate bid to win votes, Labor Deputy Leader Richard Marles has promised small business owners that they will keep the financial help they received during the pandemic, despite the coalition claims of a bid to force people to repay JobKeeper cash. After the coalition has raised the prospect of a Labor government trying to force companies to repay cash with a clawback mechanism that was not in the original scheme. Despite the coalition pointing out on multiple occasions that a clawback option was actually built into the original scheme, Labor has instead let everyone know that they too will be just as morally compromised as they need to be to win votes. Which is good. Like, I don't like too much major change, and if we could keep some consistency between the parties, that might make it easier to vote for them. But that's the end of headlines for today. Let's move on. First up today, it's economic award news. US economist David Card, seen him winning the Olympic medal for nerds, the Nobel Peace Prize, won the prize for economics. Every year, Australia's Fair Work Commission considers whether to raise the minimum wage. And every year, business leaders warn them that it will cost jobs. David Card, along with Alan Kruger, won the Nerd Medal for reversing the perception that the minimum wage is a drain on society, and that businesses who survive solely on starving their workers for as little pay as possible, and let's be honest, often less, is in fact bullshit. I mean, I am paraphrasing here, but it's not far off what they got the award for. Before Card and Kruger came along, everybody knew that imposing or increasing a minimum wage would cost jobs. Employers wouldn't have the money to keep on as many staff. Of course, we knew it. We were told it by everybody all the time. It was gaslighting for poverty. In an influential article in 1994, later expanded into a book called Myth and Measurement, The New Economics of the Minimum Wage, the book is all about a wild time in the past when counterculture was the dominant culture, flannel ruled the land, and the slacker generation had become aged and cynical and started owning all the businesses. 1992. In this year, the US state of New Jersey increased the minimum wage to be the highest in the US, and neighboring state of Pennsylvania did not. And somehow, New Jersey remains the joke state of America. I mean, pick up your past game, Pennsylvania, or we will send a joke Terminator back in time with the sole mission of changing the official joke state of the US from Jersey to Pennsylvania. Get on it. Card and Kruger surveyed around 400 fast food outlets on either side of the state border. They wanted to see whether there was any difference in the changes in the numbers of workers employed by the cities that were near each other, but differed only in what they had done to the minimum wage, and found that restaurant employment in New Jersey increased, while it decreased in Pennsylvania. Weird that people were more keen to get better paying jobs, and that's so strange. It just makes no sense, you know what I mean? As someone in the arts, I am under the impression that people work for the experience and for the joy, not for financial restitution. Weird, I just don't understand it. Or at the very least, that's my lived experience. Like, please, do come see my festival show. It will help a lot. However, it has taken until 2021 for the support for the minimum wage to spread to institutions like the International Monetary Fund and the OECD, describing Card and Kruger's paper as central to this change in view. And it's only taken nearly 30 years to get this acknowledgement and recognition that they deserve, which, on a scale of recognition to reward, is only beaten by former politicians who go into lobbying jobs for industries that they have no experience in, but have been taking kickbacks from for years. They get in there real fast. Card and Kruger's work has been cited in judgments by Australia's Fair Work Commission. So when you get a pay rise, you better raise a pizza slice from your work appreciation pizza to Card and Kruger. In another study, Card examined the impact of immigration on wages and employment of locals. He found it was tiny. I mean, I guess he hasn't been talking to Australian farmers, because if you ask them, the only people willing to do their shitty, hard, underpaid work were people forced to do it by requirement of the visa extension. And spoiler alert, those people aren't from here. Alan Kruger arguably made an even greater contribution to economics. His work ranged from an economics inequality and rock and roll music to terrorism, so quite the spectrum. He wrote that in contrast to the assumption that terrorists come from impoverished, uneducated environments, terrorists often come from middle-class, college-educated backgrounds, which is fascinating, but my guy, come on. As if the Liberals need more excuses to raise the cost of doing a degree. Maybe cut back on this study a little bit, eh? Moving on now to No Honour Among Thieves news. Cybercriminals. They're the ones who think people foolish enough to fall for a email scam also know how to turn actual money into cryptocurrency. Guys, even Disney stopped using Disney dollars. You need to use some real money. So a series of criminals who are using ransomware as a service scheme have been spotted complaining in a group that they rent the malware from could be using a hidden backdoor to grab ransom payments for themselves. I mean, really, it's hard to believe that people who made a software for you to use to rip people off have figured out a secret way to rip you off. Who would have seen that coming? It's like Black Mirror, but it's happening to someone who absolutely deserves what is happening to them. Reville is one of the most notorious and most common forms of ransomware, and among others, was responsible for blackmailing CNBC. The group behind Reville leases their ransomware out to other crooks in exchange for a cut of the profits. These affiliates make by extorting Bitcoin payments in exchange for the ransomware decryption keys that their victims will need to unlock their information. The oldest business trick in the world, a protection racket. It's real Tony Soprano shit. This is a nice business you built here. Be a shame if someone was to lock you out of it. Oh, whoops. Well, you know about Bitcoin? You will real soon. It's a blockchain. Not like NFTs. No. Hang on. Sit down. We're good. We've got a long talk ahead of us. It was recently disclosed that there's a secret backdoor coded into their product which allows Reville to restore the encrypted files without the involvement of the affiliate. Is there no tech company that isn't involved in outside of the fine print shady dealings? I mean, I came to you, a company built on ripping people off with the simple idea of ripping someone off. But I'm not supposed to be the people getting ripped off. Come on, I thought we had an arrangement. One user claimed in a forum to have had suspicions about Reville's tactics, saying their own plans to extort $7 million from a victim were abruptly ended because they believe that one of the Reville authors took over the negotiations using that backdoor and then made off with the money, which is just beautiful. Oh no, did you lose control of your ransomware? Oh no, It must be terrible to find yourself in a situation where suddenly your finances are under threat and you might have to put it all into this one business, be it out of desperation or simple lack of other opportunities. That'd really suck. Who would try to do that to another person? Now, this might not exactly come across, but I'm all for this. This is sort of like The Wire-esque. Thieves steal from thieves. You know, everyone's in the game. Everyone who's in the game is fair game. And I hope that the Revar guys, when stealing from their thieves, are whistling, "A hunting we will go, a hunting we will go," the entire time. At some point, maybe have to leap out of a fifth-story window in order to save themselves from a group that they were trying to rip off. Eventually teaching your skills to a generation of children who will get caught up in the same cycle of poverty and desperation. Spoiler alert for The Wire, I guess, by the way. Moving on to disappointing High Court news. The High Court. If your case winds up here, you really fucked up. The High Court has made a questionable decision as it finds media outlets are responsible for Facebook comments made under articles that are shared, thanks to a case about Indigenous man Dylan Vollo and his defamation against Fairfax Media. It's actually a move so bold that I'm surprised News Corp hasn't already tried to do this, as people are always shitting on News Corp in the comments, no matter how irrelevant they are to the actual conversation. However, Vollo's complaint is completely valid, as his treatment as a detainee sparked a royal commission into the Northern Territory's youth detention system. A thing that needed to happen so that we could arm the next generation with the knowledge of awful behaviours that can be acted on in about 30 years or so, going by the current timeline of discovery to enacting. Vollo launched the defamation action in the New South Wales Supreme Court against groups including the Sydney Morning Herald, The Australian, and Sky News over third-party comments about him on their Facebook pages. And this is huge news for The Australian and Sky News. Their brand is chaos, outrage, and hate clicks and comments. So they do need to be held accountable for their actions. It's impossible to argue that Sky News and The Australian don't know the response that people are going to give when they've spent more than 40 years telling people that Indigenous people are in detention because they deserve to be and refuse to learn to assimilate. So outlets that function on outrage as a driver for clicks to generate revenue definitely needed to be held accountable for the terrible hot takes that they are writing, because they can't afford to run on a pay-what-you-feel-it's-worth model like The Guardian, because it's all worthless trash and nobody wants to pay for it. But this will have serious impact on genuine news outlets who have become the centre of conspiracy theorist ire. Even CNBC has taken down their Facebook page because of the ruling. I mean, people should probably migrate off Facebook regardless, but it is a good excuse to get out of there. I've spent time on the streets as a local journalist documenting anti-lockdown rallies and have been yelled at and called fake news media. They wouldn't even have heard of the paper that I was writing for, but anyone filming and not joining them is considered the enemy. Trying to generate outrage by documenting average working class people to make other groups think that they're behaving unreasonably sounds really familiar, but I cannot place why that sounds so familiar. Weird. Let me just think on it for a little bit, I guess. So the High Court hasn't always been so out of touch. In 1951, they brought forth the Communist Party case. This judgment invalidated Parliament's attempt to invoke its defence powers to declare the Australian Communist Party an unlawful association. It's pretty progressive given the wave of oh god, things might change forever, that swept the world at the time. It was a very scary time, apparently. This has the Australian pissed. So much so, it caused them to do some actual journalism. It frustrates me greatly to see the potential for journalism inside these journalists. But here it is. This is where we're at. This journalist wrote, defamation lawyer Anne Flaffin of Baker McKenzie made the point that the High Court's ruling is also at odds with a decision of the New Zealand Court of Appeal. The New Zealand Court has determined that the administrator of a Facebook page cannot be held liable for the comments of third parties if the administrator had no actual knowledge of the comments. Here, again, the Australian defending a decision by New Zealand instead of just saying that they've let wokeness drive them to an unsustainable politics of make happiness for all except Whitey. It's just wild to see the Australian take such a hard turn away from its usual stance. There are some interesting dominoes potentially lining up here, as Peter Dutton has recently announced that he thinks that a legal fund should be set up so that ministers can sue people who say derogatory things about them. Yes, that is a very true thing that he did and suggested, and should not surprise you at all if you have followed Peter Dutton for more than a day. It would actually mean that the ABC could put an article about Dutton, say, wanting to set up a legal fund that would allow him to sue more everyday Australians like he currently is. And then, say, someone jumps in the comments and says that he's a trash goblin who's trying to force Australians into poverty while accumulating so much wealth and power that he's able to forget that he had a $1 million property when it came to declaring his taxes, a very true thing that actually happened, and claims that he can't afford to sue people despite earning around $360,000 a year, plus an allowance of $32,000 just because, which means he's either terrible with money, which, you know, given his inability to track a $1 million property, that kind of plays out, or he's planning on suing a lot of people. And let's be honest, there is a lot of people he could sue because most of us have said something like, he's such a bad potato that even the Irish during the potato famine would rather starve than eat him. You know, pretty standard stuff across the board. But something to keep an eye on. Moving on to Australia failing news. The OECD, the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, a group of 38 member countries shaming each other into a better world. Australia is currently trailing behind other countries in terms of unemployment benefits, and without being too speculative, I would put a good portion of that onto the overtly spoken mantra, say it with me now, the best form of welfare is a job. I mean, you don't need to prop up welfare if you don't plan on putting anyone on it, right? Seems reasonable. While the media keeps claiming that social security benefits are recently increased to keep up with the rising cost of living, they were also decreased from record highs to support people during the pandemic because, hey, guess what? They weren't enough for people to survive on. In a new report, the OECD said the benefit for a single person in the first month of unemployment is just 29% of the average wage. The OECD report said the income shock from falling into unemployment in Australia is much larger than in other countries, and minimum income supports remain well below the relative poverty line. One estimate suggests that 85% of recipients of unemployment benefits will be in poverty. So I guess you can't really call them benefits as such. The report pointed to government benefits being judged on the average wage instead of on the average cost of living, increasing the risk of Australians falling into poverty. Because while the cost of living continues to rise, wages have stayed lower than Sky News opinions of Dan Andrews. The OECD said the Australian government should consider increasing unemployment support payments as well as moving to increase wages. And look, to their credit, they did consider it, but then they rejected it. The OECD suggested the government should index further increases to average wage growth. But honestly, I am sure that this would just end up with them impacting raising of the minimum wage further, because they will do what it takes to keep those welfare payments low. If you want to make sure that welfare recipients get paid, then I guess you've got to index it to parliamentary pay rises, because those things never get held back. They fly through every single time. The OECD said the government should increase spending on training programs for unemployed Australians, as well as ensuring private companies are doing what they can to keep their employees trained. Now, we are going to need some good training, though, because acceptable training programs that will lead to long-term wealth for the poor include hiding your money in shell companies, exploiting your family for fun and profit, a Stuart Robert masterclass, the flexible ethics of taking bribes, and how to influence people and destroy the environment. Classes are selling out fast, so you better be getting quick. Another major pitfall of the report drew attention to was that Australia lacks rewards for long-term employment. It said that on average, training programs only supported Australians for up to 26 weeks of being employed, incentivizing employers to get rid of people and hire newer, fancier employees and get those sweet, sweet hiring incentives. The report said initiatives that promote high-quality training programs will also benefit other vulnerable groups where low skills can be a barrier to finding a job, such as Indigenous Australians. Because if there's one thing that will bring equality, it is lifting up disenfranchised communities to the point where they can also manipulate systems and benefit from their misdeeds. We've got to get everybody there. The organisation said there is a big difference between how the young and the old are taxed, which has led to a large gap in wealth between generations, and that taxation should be aligned with different forms of savings, an idea so simple and genuinely effective it'd never get passed in Australia. Sure, the Greens will campaign on it. They're never going to be in charge, so we don't have to think about it, I guess. I mean, we can't even manage to take control of the climate situation. Australia has been ranked last among developed nations on climate performance and pledges. I mean, it's not like we have a series of unprecedented natural disasters showing up at unnatural rates within one of our most populous states, or mass bleaching events, or News Corp turning to the path of climate change, which I actually believe was one of the signs of the apocalypse. Let's see. Here it is. Mass hysteria, cats and dogs living together, and News Corp supporting climate change. Yep, that's it. The federal government is currently debating net zero emissions policies, and we have had to bully our Prime Minister to actually show up to the Glasgow Climate Summit by scaring him with disappointment from the royal family.
There are some governments that seem reluctant to accept the urgency of this. I don't want to single out some individual countries. Australia, for example, what would you say to a government like the government of Australia that seems reluctant to take on board the need to take really serious action on this issue?
No. I mean, you gently try to suggest there may be other ways of doing things. In my case, anyway. Otherwise, you lot accuse me of interfering and meddling, don't you?
Scott Morrison, the Australian PM, isn't even certain that he could make it to the meeting in Glasgow?
Is that what he says, is he?
He did say, yeah. He said he's spent enough time in quarantine. I mean, what would you say to world leaders about why they should come to Glasgow?
Well, that's what I'm trying to say all the time. And the point being that this is a last chance saloon.
A new report ranked Australia as the worst performing developed country when it comes to climate actions. We did it, guys. We did it. We're number one. Now, the ranking would not shift if the coalition agreed to a net zero emissions target by 2050, which they kind of have at this point. The Climate Council said that as it called on Australia to take on a sustainability strengthened 2030 target to Glasgow, which they basically have tiptoed around and said that they don't need to because they're going to hit their targets at a higher rate than what they've actually set. Which is kind of shady anyway. And that's going to be a real problem when we find out things like five of the Nationals' 21 MPs and senators own shares in fossil fuel companies. Like, for example, Nationals' deputy leader David Littleproud, who has the most resource-heavy share portfolio of anybody in the party. Let's have a look at it, shall we? So, it seems he's owning shares in BHP Mining Company, South 32, Blue Energy, Oil and Gas Exploration, and Atlas, an iron ore company run by Gina Rinehart, whose Hancock Prospecting acquired it in 2018. He also has shares in Ausenco, an engineering company primarily servicing the resources industry. Weird. Littleproud's dependent children are also listed as having BHP and South 32 shares. Ooh. So really, he's just a good dad, providing a future fortune for his children to use to buy strong-armed guards to keep the plebs out of their shelter that they built in New Zealand. Or, as it will be known in the coming climate disaster, the last hope. It's just wonderful to see someone being a good parent. Oh, and here's something interesting. He also voted some very specific and probably not at all related votes. Like, for example, voting strongly for increasing state and territory environmental approval powers, which basically would weaken environmental laws more than they already are. He also strongly voted against government action on animal and plant extinctions. I guess there's no need to protect our unique flora and fauna, because protecting the things that have always lived in Australia is very un-Australian. He voted very strongly against community rights to say no to nuclear waste disposal sites, voted very strongly against increasing investment in renewable energy, very strongly against increasing transparency of a big business by making information public, and voted very strongly against protecting the Great Barrier Reef. Not to mention he voted very strongly against the Australian Renewable Energy Agency. Really starting to sense a theme here. Voted very strongly against treating government action on climate change as a matter of urgency. I mean, we got plenty of time. 2030 is like 9 years away. That sort of time is unimaginable in the scale of our lifetimes. I mean, these next ones aren't even environment related, but they were certainly interesting and I think they help shape his character, in case you think that I'm like cherry picking data here. He voted very strongly against creating a federal anti-corruption commission. He voted very strongly against increasing penalties for breach of data. Ooh. This is related to for-profit companies that has been contracted by the government to store sensitive information or to provide services to citizens that fail to do so. So just a little piece of information for you there. He voted very strongly against stopping tax avoidance or aggressive tax minimalization. And this last one's a real doozy. He voted very strongly against treating the COVID vaccine rollout as a matter of urgency. David Littleproud. Littleproud we are, indeed. I mean, not much to say about that last one, except maybe, whoopsie. Probably should have considered that more of a thing. Let's see, who else have we got here? Regional Health Minister David Gillespie, who was promoted to the front bench after Barnaby Joyce returned to the party leadership. Now he has shares in BHP South 32 and gold extractor Northern Star Resources. Funnily enough, so does his wife. His voting record is very much the same. Voted very strongly for unconventional gas mining, voted very strongly against government action on animal and plant extinctions, very strongly against a fast transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy, strongly against a minerals resource rent tax, strongly against protecting the barrier reef, strongly against the Australian Renewable Energy Agency, strongly against treating government action on climate change as a matter of urgency. Whew, that was a mouthful. There's Senator Perrin Davey, as shares in BHP, voted very strongly for Adani's proposed Carmichael coal mine in the Galilee Basin. Oh, weird. Voted very strongly for increasing state and territory environmental approval powers. Very strongly for unconventional gas mining. Very strongly for increasing investment in the coal industry. Very strongly for offshore oil mining. Strongly against a fast transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy. Very strongly against the carbon price. Voted very strongly against building community climate change resilience. Very strongly against government action on animal and plant extinctions. Then there's Senator Susan McDonald, who has shares in BHP. She voted very strongly for Adani's proposed Carmichael coal mine in the Galilee Basin. Very strongly for increasing state and territory environmental approval powers, which we discussed earlier. Very strongly for increasing investment in the coal industry. Very strongly for offshore oil mining. Very strongly against the carbon price. Very strongly against building community climate change resilience. Very strongly against ending illegal logging. Very strongly against government action on animal and plant extinctions. Voted very strongly against increasing investment in renewable energy. Very strongly against increasing marine conservation. Very strongly against increasing protection of Australia's fresh water, which seems like a weird one to vote against, but okay. Very strongly against protecting the Great Barrier Reef. Voted very strongly against protecting threatened forest and bushland habitats. And voted very strongly against stopping former ministers from taking lobbying positions within 5 years. Well, that seems very suspicious. Voted very strongly against the Paris Climate Agreement. Very strongly against treating government action on climate change as a matter of urgency. Starting to notice some patterns here. And this is Ken Dowd, who is retiring as the member of Flint in Central Queensland, but he has shares in Giant Woodside Petroleum. Now, O'Dowd has interest in BHP, Rio Tinto, and Caltex, and voted very strongly against the carbon price. Voted very strongly against a fast transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy. Voted very strongly against a minerals resource rent tax. Voted very strongly against carbon farming. Very strongly against ending illegal logging. Voted very strongly against government action on animal and plant extinctions. Voted very strongly against increasing investment in renewable energy. Voted very strongly against increasing marine conservation. Very strongly against increasing protection of Australia's fresh water. Again, why are we not protecting our fresh water? Voted very strongly against letting environmental groups challenge the legality of certain government decisions. Voted very strongly against protecting the Great Barrier Reef. But hey, of these, using the Nationals as your scapegoat nonsense, it's a bit much, guys. After all, the Nationals have given their in-principle support to back a target of net zero by 2050. Yeah, sure, in principle. I mean, I'm all for the idea of it. Barnaby Joyce said most concerns had been allayed when the majority of members and senators were now on board with the plan, saying, We're in support of our progress going forward that would go towards a 2050 emissions target. No. You're in support of a process. A process, you say. I mean, I'm also in support of a process. When I'm asked to take out the trash, I have a four-hour party meeting with the MAP party, and I come out saying that it wasn't enough time to make a decision and if I should take out the trash, and then I have to have a second meeting after which I come to the decision that I should commit to the idea of a process of looking towards taking out the trash by 2050. Everybody is happy, including the trash. Nobody ever considers the feelings of the trash. Maybe it doesn't want to be taken out. So what has driven this groundbreaking agreeing to the looking at the idea of maybe committing to saving the land that farmers farm on? What could it possibly have been? The Nationals won an extra cabinet position as they signed on to the net zero deal. Interesting. Very, very interesting. Well, here's a man who's willing to acknowledge that an adult conversation about nuclear needs to be had. That technology has changed.
Keith Pitt has been pushing in federal parliament for what he calls an adult conversation about nuclear power.
Well, that was a bit of a curveball, and I'm not sure that heading into a desperate battle for votes in an election next year that you should be stoking the nuclear fire, my friend. People still remember Chernobyl. The HBO show, I mean, not the actual disaster. It's been a while since that happened. But the show was really good, right? I really loved how it was sure to highlight how the pride and arrogance of government officials in the face of experts and blatant evidence that a disaster of earth-damaging proportions was getting out of control, and to save the people who'd be most impacted by it, you know, the ones that were far, far away, they needed to show supplication and inform the public of the truth and take action. But I guess there's no reason to worry about comparisons, as you've so rightly pointed out, the technology has changed.
Forward. Technology has moved. It's like trying to compare the old FJ Haldon with what's happening now with a Tesla, for example. Things have really moved on.
Though, I'm not sure old Keith should be using Tesla as his comparison, as he has trouble understanding electricity.
The Minister for Resources.
Well, can I thank the Honourable Member for their question and say to the Honourable Member, find me a solar panel that works in the dark. I mean, this is just a statement of fact, Mr. Speaker. It absolutely is.
So you have fallen so low that Anthony Albanese is actually able to roast you in Parliament. Good work, Keith. Doing a great job there.
Last week, the Minister told Question Time, quote, find me a solar panel that works in the dark. Is the Minister aware that batteries can store renewable energy? And does the Minister get a shock when he turns on the tap and water comes out even though it's not raining outside?
But maybe the biggest problem is the plan Morrison and friends are bringing to the table. Tell us, won't you, Angus Taylor?
Our plan is to get to net zero by 2050 through technology, not taxes.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I didn't realise it was all about technology, not taxes. Well, let's hear all about the wonderful new technology that is going to help us bring down our very high coal emissions rates. I mean, look at this chart. We're even higher than the US. I mean, we're just above, but we are higher than the US. And they're sending billionaires to space like the planet is dying from some sort of predictable environmental catastrophe. No reason to worry about that. And the Morrison government has, to put it lightly, had a real middle child dragging their feet to do a chore energy on renewables. Let's have a look at Morrison here. We got a clip.
It's the Prime Minister's own words that said that the biggest battery in Australia, in South Australia, to store energy, renewable energy, was as useful as the big prawn and the big banana.
By all means, have the world's biggest battery, have the world's biggest banana, have the world's biggest prawn.
It's the Prime Minister who said that new technology in the form of electric vehicles would end the weekend. This is a Prime Minister who has disparaged action.
I mean, 50% renewable energy is nuts.
He's become a caricature of himself, having spent years ridiculing action on climate change. I mean, it's bizarre, Kieran.
50% renewable energy is nuts.
And the truth is that this is a government that are running out of time.
I mean, if Albo keeps this up, I'll be out of a job. There's only room for one of us making mediocre jokes about Oz politics, and I guess I'll have to take my turn as PM, fail at it, and get a golden retirement. I mean, whatever it takes to stop Dutton from getting in. Though it is incredible the short-sightedness of the lack of transition and development of some of the investment or funding towards the CSIRO. I don't know if they are aware of this, but we live in a desert. Sure, we're getting wild rainstorms now, but once the tornadoes have taken our water somewhere over the rainbow to Oz, we'll be left with only the desert that we deserve. Look at this. It says this statement here. You can't grow food without water. The World Meteorological Organization recently warned of a looming global water crisis. In Australia, the CSIRO says average annual Murray-Darling inflows have almost halved since 2020. And according to an Australian Bureau of Agricultural and Resource Economics and Sciences report in July, the average Australian farm is losing $30,000 a year because of climate change, mostly because there is less water. That quote was from an article in The Australian. Again, look at what can be achieved when the journalists are allowed to journal. This proper quotes with facts backing them up. Granted, the power and influence of the Murdoch papers will mean that the Coalition is somehow still in government in 2050, delivering their new net zero plan. Do we have a clip?
Do not, my friends, become addicted to water. It will take hold of you, and you will resent its absence.
Moving on now to Police Nation news. Now it's time for Australia to have a good hard look at itself, and that should be very easy, as SBS has reported that while prior to 9/11, Australia had no counter-terrorism laws, we now have 92. Can you believe it? With so many counter-terrorism laws, we've definitely done something wrong. That'd get us thrown onto some sort of watch list, which means we'll easily be able to watch ourselves. Here is an inane example. Lawyer and all-round champion of the people, Ian Cunliffe, a man in his 80s, still fighting for the rights of refugees and asylum seekers with free legal advice, has discovered a weird little quirk of the law. It says that most of us have committed numerous offences under the foreign interference legislation, and each offence carries a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison. So what is it that we could possibly have done to receive such heavy penalties? Well, see, what we've done is attempted to participate in democracy. Many of us, like Ian, have signed dozens of change.org online petitions. But however, we have failed to disclose to the targets of those petitions that we are acting in collaboration with a foreign principal. That foreign principal being change.org. Whereas Ian, he has done the additional crime of being critical in an article published in The Guardian Australia of the secret prosecutions of Witness K and Bernard Collery. See, to commit the crime of foreign interference, 3 points need to be met, 3 boxes need to be ticked. You need to engage in conduct on behalf of or in collaboration with a foreign principal, in this case the change.org or The Guardian. Engage in the conduct with the intention to influence a political or governmental process, or to influence the exercise of an Australian democratic or political right or duty, and any part of the conduct has to be covert or involve deception, or to involve the accused failing to disclose to the target that they were acting on behalf or in collaboration with a foreign principal. Oh, hey, guess what, guys? Change.org is a US company, a foreign principal. So signing the company's online petitions is a big old tick in that first point. It's also a foreign principal that encourages people to start online petitions and facilitates those petitions. But popular topics are often economic or criminal justice or human rights, education, environment protection, animal rights, health, and sustainable food. All of those points come under point number two. Not to mention that we've all failed to disclose to the targets of the petitions that we signed that we are acting in collaboration with a foreign principal, that being change.org. Ooh, whoopsie. Now, of course, when I spoke to Ian, he reassured me that the likelihood of the government acting on this is slim, but not impossible. And it serves as a solid reminder that you don't have to have done something overtly wrong to become the victim of an absurd government overreach, which makes all of these 92 laws all the more worrying. Now, the Morrison government, supported by the Labor Party, passed a law that allows for security agencies to access and manipulate the electronic data of any citizen. It's called the Identify and Disrupt Bill 2021. So this is how the law works. An AFP or ACIC officer may apply to a judge or a member of the Administrative Appeals Tribunal for what is called a data disruption warrant. This means the officer can add, copy, delete, or alter data held in the computer, which, if I'm honest, doesn't sound great. Certainly can't think of a good reason for the authorities to make adjustments to any evidence that they might have collected. This must be a push by big external hard drive to get those people to spend more money on hard drives to back up their data so that they can show where adjustments have been made. Makes sense to me. But surely, the requirement for such a law must be grand, he asked foreshadowingly. Oh, wait, no. The threshold for getting this kind of warrant is low. All the officer needs to show is that he or she or they suspects on reasonable grounds that an officer is being or is likely to be committed or has been committed, and that disruption of data held in the computer is likely to substantially assist in frustrating the commission of offences involving the computer. Then, yes, it goes on. Then there is power for the officer to seek the immediate issue of the warrant if it is impracticable for them to prepare an affidavit setting out the basis for seeking the warrant. The affidavit does not have to be filed until 3 days later. And they can get the warrant by telephone, fax, email, or other means of communication.
But there's more.
There is also a network activity warrant, which lets law enforcement access, for example, the dark web. And perhaps most troubling of all is the ability for law enforcement officials to take over a person's online accounts. The account takeover warrant can be sought from a magistrate if an AFP or ACIC officer has the same reasonable grounds belief as a data disruption warrant, and they view that taking control of one or more online accounts is necessary in the course of that investigation for the purpose of enabling evidence to be obtained on the commission of the offences. Now, the law has a 5-year sunset clause, which, if you're not sure what that means, it means it'll be overseen by the Inspector General of Intelligence and Security. The Independent National Security Legislation Monitor will review the bill in 2024, which will hopefully be known as the Year of the Dark Web. Not even for like drugs and porn, but just like, I'll be changing my grandmother's normal browser to a Tor browser so that she can do all of her craft shopping on an Onion browser. No searches will be safe. Of course, the minister responsible is Peter Dutton, and I am sure within the next however many years or months, if the next election goes the way that we all sort of hope that it will go, guys, if you guys get your shit sorted out for next year's election, let's mobilise, shall we? I am sure that, of all people, Peter Dutton can be trusted to ensure the powers are not abused by the AFP and the ACIC. It's not like he's attempting to introduce a proposal for taxpayers to fund politicians' defamation cases as a workplace entitlement. Now, I know we already talked about this, but it seemed like a real pertinent reminder that Peter Dutton is not your friend and shouldn't have this kind of power. He will take your laptop and add a Google Doc calling himself a potato over and over and over and over and over, like the repeated page of text in The Shining. And then he won't even copy and paste it. He'll actually physically sit there and type it as his brain has suffered a catastrophic failure. The capacity of the AFP and the ACIC to invade an individual's online accounts could lead to the destruction of exculpatory data. That's the manipulation of data and the unlawful sweeping up of evidence that is unrelated to the warrant, or even remove what may be used as proof of innocence. It's a strong possibility. Australia does not have a national human rights charter or law, which is going to be really upsetting for those who have been travelling the country and serving nurses and frontline workers at Bunnings with arcane scripture and charters that have been the bare bones for better laws down the road. Like a procession of uniformed monks wandering into a store, like a failed Monty Python sketch. Except everybody expects the Karen Inquisition. The unprecedented surveillance bill was rushed through Parliament in 24 hours. Oh, and fun fact, which in this instance is a cheerful euphemism for horrible revelation, when presented with such a warrant from Administrative Appeals Tribunal, Australian companies or system administrators or so forth must comply and must actively help the police to modify, add, copy, or delete the data of a person under investigation. Very interesting. Now, I haven't worked for a company that didn't need police incentive to sell a worker up the river, but when refusing to comply could have someone end up in jail for up to 10 years, they will happily hand over you and your data faster than they did the Hamburglar. Required hacking activities could include altering, copying, and deleting data, intercepting and modifying communications, surveilling networks, and changing account credentials. The Human Rights Law Centre says the bill has insufficient safeguards for free speech and press freedom. Digital Rights Watch calls it a warrantless surveillance regime and notes that the government ignored the recommendations of a bipartisan parliamentary committee to limit the powers granted by the new law. According to the Department of Home Affairs, more and more criminal activity makes use of the dark web and anonymizing technologies. Disgusting. Taking advantage of anonymizing technologies to conduct clandestine activities, probably like naming themselves something culturally inappropriate like the Klan. We wouldn't want to see anybody doing activities like that oh, whoops, look at that WA Parliament, what are you doing? Well, at least that was just the WA portion of the Liberal Party, you know. It's not like other members of the coalition would act in such a manner. Oh, well, that's the last time I put myself out on a limb for you, Liberal Party. You bunch of power-hungry monsters. Well, I think we're going to end with something a little bit lighter. I definitely can't end on that last story. So, finally, it's over to Art News. I am here on the beat, on the Art Beat, here for the bearer of weird news, at the corner of Melting Clock Drive and Giant God Ceiling Lane, to bring you the hardest hitting news from the art world. First, to Wales, the country so quiet you forgot it was part of the UK. Some artwork commissioned for Cardiff City Centre has been washed away by cleaners following a miscommunication error. The murals were commissioned by For Cardiff, a body aimed at making the city vibrant and welcoming. For Cardiff apologised and said it was due to a devastating error involving our cleansing contractor. Maybe that's your issue right there, Cardiff. Cleansing contractor? A cleansing contractor sounds like someone that the Germans might have hired in around the 1930s when they thought a town was getting too colourful, if you know what I mean. And by the looks of the before and after images, this cleansing contractor was very successful in removing colour. Speaking of old white things, Vienna, the city that desperately doesn't want you to look up its most famous citizen. Vienna's tourism board has started an account on OnlyFans. OnlyFans is... hang on, what am I pretending for? You know what OnlyFans is. It's like TikTok, but they get to the nudie bits. This was done in protest against social media platforms' ongoing censorship of the art museums and galleries, and of the unmitigated suppression of potatoes and onions. We will not stand for this any longer. If the museum wants to get its art on Facebook, then it's going to have to cover the naughty bits with something that Facebook thinks is more comfortable and appropriate for its platform. Swastikas. Speaking of museums, a Danish museum wants an artist to return around 534,000 kroner, which comes to roughly $83,000. He was given this amount in cash to recreate old artworks using the banknotes. He produced blank canvases titled Take the Money and Run. Kept the cash, and I gotta say, guys, I love this. Jens Harning, the artist in question and man enjoying his last day at his shitty job, was asked to reproduce two of his old works representing the annual salary in Denmark and Austria. The director of the museum and man who always laughs at a joke saying, huh, that's funny, Lars Andersen, said that he found the situation humoristic, but was clear that the money needed to be paid back when the exhibition ends. But People's Champion, Jens Hanning, has vowed to keep the cash, saying, the work is that I have taken their money. He said he decided to keep the money after rejecting the idea of reproducing art that was more than a decade old. Instead, he said he wanted to create a work that dealt immediately with his own work situation. Recreating his past works in money would have cost him 25,000 kroner, putting him out of pocket, and saying of the work, I encourage other people who have just as miserable working conditions as me to do the same. They're sitting on some shit job and not getting money and are actually being asked to give money to go to work. They should take the money and run. And damn straight they should. Seems like we, the workers, are the only idiots paying for anything. We're the only clowns paying our taxes and we're not getting paid properly by our bosses, and we're not getting our businesses funded by pork barreling, or a million secret dollars dropped into our laps for suing the ABC, or for asking the public to pay for politicians to sue while earning ever-increasing amounts of public funds and having a large volume of benefits slapped on top of that. So fucking take the money, run. I encourage this guy to keep going as long as he can. And that brings us to the end of the episode. I would like to thank you all so much for your time, for hanging around and coming all the way to the end of the episode. As always, really appreciate those of you who made it this far. Once again, I do have my show, Wage Against the Machine, coming to a few festivals next year. It's in decent shape, and I would really love to see your responses and hear you guys and see some crowds. So if you like what you've seen here, if you enjoyed it, please come see the show. Please encourage others to come see the show. Encourage some people to watch the podcast, and maybe by watching the podcast, I can encourage them to come see the show so that you don't have to do the hard work. Either way, love to see you all, guys. Thank you so much. Stay safe out there. Look after yourselves. See you next time.